Hello, everyone, and welcome to the CCW podcast. This is Al.
Hey, everybody. Dagny's here, too.
Hey, welcome to episode 19. We're going to call this one Have Gun, Will Travel. And I guess first we should start off by deeply apologizing for the long delay in getting an episode up.
Our loyal listeners will be happy to hear that softball's over. That has really been
softball
a
is
big
over.
Commitment.
12 home runs, people. Not bad.
So we should be getting back into the swing of things and doing more regular podcasts here.
No pun intended, swing of things.
Oh, I didn't even, yeah, really not intended. So I guess we should remind everyone of our email if you want to get a hold of us.
Yeah, first things first. Please, if anyone has any questions or comments, feel free to leave them on iTunes at at the CCW Podcast iTunes Store. Or you can email us at ccwpodcast@gmail.com or visit our blog at ccwshow.blogspot.com or ccwpodcast.podomatic.com. The Podomatic is actually our host of the podcast, so feel free to visit any of those and leave a comment under any show notes or ask us questions on email. We love getting feedback, and our turnaround on emails is not very good lately, has it?
No, we have a couple that we haven't responded to. We haven't overlooked you. I think they primarily related to the defensive home shotgun, and we still haven't made that purchase. There's no spoiler here in me saying that. We just haven't made that purchase yet, and so we don't really have much to discourse on about it.
Well, if you, I've kind of been set on the Remington 870. It's just a matter of actually getting out to the stores and buying it, and whether or not we do it at our local Wally World, Walmart, or some other, you know, the local gun stores, we're not sure yet. We always like to support the gun stores when we can. But obviously, with this day and age of everything seemingly going up by the day, getting our value is very important, too. So we're kind of weighing that in our heads, too. And while you mentioned the shotgun, we're also talking about ARs, and I think I'm leaning toward maybe a Colt. Seems to be the best. I don't want to say bang for the buck, but it seems to be a very good value. Still looking at, I think, north of $1,000, so it's obviously quite an expenditure. But that's just something I was thinking of, and if any of you listeners have any strong opinions, either way, we'd like an email, please. Some of you longtime listeners, I believe Ross even has thrown his hat into what he thinks that we should get. And before we talk about our long absence, and everyone knows softball season is over, we want to give a quick shout-out. Go ahead.
We had a new listener email us, and they are a fellow podcaster over at The Frugal Shooter. So that was pretty exciting, and maybe some of our listeners overlap, or maybe we've gained some new listeners from him referencing us in one of his recent episodes. That's pretty cool. I think he even created a permanent link in his profile for our show.
Yeah, and so we'll make sure and do the same. It's the Frugal Shooter podcast, and he was very kind in, one of his most recent episodes, Come See Babu, I believe was the name of the episode. I don't know, it was a tongue twister, I know for sure. But he was very kind to us, and we appreciate a fellow podcaster reaching out. We've thought about reaching out to some podcasters, but we always get a little bit gun shy, so to speak.
Okay.
No more puns.
Yeah, okay. No more puns.
So, yeah, it was. We're very grateful, and we'll definitely link his podcast for you guys in the show notes. And what else can we talk about? A lot's happened over the last couple months.
There's not a whole lot. I mean, we're at the same position in a way that we were the last episode. We haven't gone to the range. Still, we're still, weighing our options on our next purchase. I am having second thoughts, I guess, about ruling out the Glock 26 for a number of reasons, and I took my CCW class with the Glock 19, and they are very similar frames. Are they identical frames?
No, they're I think identically as wide.
And the width.
But they're not as long or as tall.
So I'll cut you off a little bit there. The width is my biggest concern because of my grip. And the 19 seemed comfortable, so I'm wondering if the 26 would be comfortable too. And then there's still the issue of concealment, but it would make it very nice to be able to interchange the magazines and then all of the ammo, of course, with the 9s. So we need to get to a range, and I want to try and rent a 26 and see how it feels, and, you know, maybe they can show me some of the holster options, and I can even see in the store how that would or wouldn't work.
Right. And just to give you guys an idea about prices over here, we went to our local Gander Mountain, and they want $699 for their Gen 4 Glock 26s, which just blew my mind a little bit, so we might order that online or something. But what else can we talk about? We went on a vacation. We went up to the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, way up north as humanly possible in the United States. And we took a week off and, basically had a few, we had every inclination to check out a few gun stores, and we, believe it or not, really only could find one.
We were really surprised at the lack of stores.
Right. And the store was Superior Outdoors, I believe.
It was in Escanaba, I believe.
It was in a town called Escanaba, which was right on the... where was that? Right along the coast.
The southern part of the UP, which is the very northern tip of Lake Michigan.
Mm-hmm. And it's a nice little beach town, sleepy little beach town, and they had a website, so one of the few gun stores that had a website in the UP, and they're very nice, very cordial people, showed us a few firearms. The Ruger, was it the LC9, I think, that you had a chance to handle? We're just still trying to find Dagny A Slim single stack 9mm, and we just haven't found one that we would like to purchase, at least until she gets a chance to rent it out. Maybe, you know, we haven't even gotten it narrowed down to renting it yet, which led her back to the Glock 26. But as to the UP, just one thing to keep up with the Semper Petari movement, I did carry, and Dagny did carry at times too, or at least she brought her firearms with her. And one particular place we didn't visit was a national park. And it was for us a minor issue because, as you know, you can carry in the parks, but apparently you can't carry in the facilities of the park.
Right. It's like a wrinkle in the allowance to carry. I don't believe you can carry where federal employees may be. So that would be like the visitor centers, which are where restrooms are.
Mm-hmm.
And so if we were going to make a day of something, we were just like, do we want to even bother? I mean, there was so much else to do up there. So we didn't end up going to the national.
Yeah, we ended up skipping that and going to the Porcupine Mountains, which was a very, very beautiful part of the Upper Peninsula, beautiful part of the United States of America.
On the edge of Wisconsin.
It's north of Wisconsin, actually.
I think it could have been quicker from where we live to go a different route, but we wanted to see more.
We stayed. We cut up through Michigan and went left, and...
left being west.
West. We went left. And we basically pretty much saw the entire Upper Peninsula. We even saw northern Michigan and all that. But you guys don't want to hear about our vacation. What we want to basically say is that we did carry, and we avoided the national parks, just because we didn't want to have to deal with a situation where I had to use the facilities and was carrying and was technically, you know, quote-unquote breaking the law. We wouldn't want to do that, so...
I just think we always, when we travel, like to get a feel for the local flavor and their attitudes toward carrying. And the store in Escanaba, we kind of asked them, like, why are we not seeing any gun? We thought that there would be tons, like, with all the hunting, and, you know, it's just more rule everywhere. And they referred to it as basement bandits. And do you remember that, Al?
Yeah, he's basically said everyone has a gun, but there aren't any gun stores in the UP. And we asked why, and he said, well, there's a lot of basement bandits out there. And we asked him what that was, and it's apparently people who, sell out of their basements with their FFLs. And
like, before the FFL was really hard to get. I don't know that much about FFL.
Apparently, they had their federal firearms licenses grandfathered in, so they don't have to go through all the loopholes that people today have to go through if they want their federal firearms licenses. So that was a pretty interesting thing to hear. I guess it would explain why we didn't see many more gun stores. We ended up going to a Gander Mountain, though, I think, in Marquette, was it?
Yeah, I think so.
We poked our head in there. We didn't really get anything, but, and then we also, and getting more up to the traveling, we not only did we go up north, we also went out west, and we had to fly, and we flew into the great state of Nevada. And I did a lot of research on carrying laws, and Nevada is a state that does have reciprocity with our state. So it was very interesting to know that you could even carry in casinos, and that's something of a wrinkle from our state where casinos are exempt. So I did a lot of research on that, and we were obviously a bit nervous flying with the firearm and that process because we hadn't done it before. So I reached out to Ross from Nebraska, one of our best listeners, definitely one of our most knowledgeable listeners, and asked him how one would go about traveling with a firearm. I think he's pretty well knowledgeable in many subjects. And so I reached out to him, and he gave me some very good advice, and I'd like to share it all with you guys. Basically, I went to the TSA website and read their policy on firearms. And then I went to our particular airline's website and read their company policy, which pretty much was in line with it. And so basically what I did was I traveled with the Glock 30 short frame, and we basically bought two locks, one for the gun case itself and one for the luggage. So we kind of double locked it. And obviously, whenever you want to travel with a firearm, flying at least, you want to make sure it's unloaded. And I made sure and had the gun opened. But believe it or not, throughout the entire flight process, they never once checked the actual firearm to see whether or not it was loaded, which was kind of surprising. And just to walk you guys through it, I kept my firearm, my Glock, in the case, opened, unloaded, magazine unloaded as well, and had an ammunition in a separate container. I had it just in its separate ammo box, and had that in the checked luggage, in our luggage too. So basically, I locked the luggage, locked the gun case, put the gun case in the luggage and locked it, of course. Then you go and check in like you normally would. And as soon as you, hand over your ID, you say, or at least I said, I need to declare a firearm. And I don't know, I kind of perceived, and they didn't outrightly seem put off by it, but I almost could sense they were a little uneasy with the whole thing. And I guess maybe I may have been reading into it, because at least, that first time I was a little bit nervous.
I didn't sense it, and I was super, super, super nervous. I was just like, do we really need to pack it for the short trip we're taking? But I didn't sense that discomfort that Al did, maybe.
I wanted to do it for two reasons. One, because we want to live semper paratore. We want to live always carry. And number two, I just wanted to figure out how easy it would be or how hard. And I think that that first time getting through it, what would have been the hardest, at least, you know, before I got comfortable with the regulations and whatnot over time. But after you declare it, they basically tell you that, you know, okay, is it unloaded? And you have to answer yes, and they ask you if there's ammo, and, you know, whether or not it weighs a certain amount or more, and some number like 11 pounds or something. And I said, no, it doesn't weigh more than 11 pounds, just a box. And they make you fill out a little thing that says that you are being, the firearms that you're checking in are unloaded. You sign it, you put, you date it, and you put the flight numbers on it. And you put that on top of the box, on top of the gun case. Not inside the gun case, but definitely inside the luggage and on top of the gun case. And then you send it, you get a TSA to check it out, and once they check it out, you're good to go. And
yeah, when we were flying out to Nevada, the process was very simple, and the agent was really cool. He was bored. It was an early flight or an afternoon flight. I don't remember now. But he was like, so, what kind of gun you have? Right. I mean, he was just very, very chill guy. And then on the way back, we missed our first flight because of a flight change time. And that kind of complicated things. So we don't know. I'm assuming the process would have been the same regardless.
It would have been the same, I think.
And the wait for a TSA agent to even arrive to look at the luggage for us was like half an hour.
Yeah, good half an hour.
And he actually, do you want to describe the process, Al?
Well, he took the checked luggage that we wanted to check that had the unloaded firearm in it and a locked case. And he took us to a separate room, which was kind of interesting. And there he opened up the luggage. Again, didn't open up the gun case, but he took some swabs and was checking for what we think is probably explosive residue or something.
Yeah, he opened literally every zippered pocket or compartment the suitcase had. And he used one little wipe and swabbed every surface that he could find.
Right.
And then ran it through some kind of a machine, and, you know, it came back clear, and we were good.
It came back clear, and we were good, yeah. And so that was, we had, you know, read all these horror stories about traveling these days, and, you know, we're happy to report that it really was, you know, except for our little missed flight, that was all our fault. But other than that, it was very painless to fly and travel with the firearms legally, and basically wanted to let everyone know that if you're apprehensive or fearful about it, just to check up and read the regulations that TSA offers. And obviously you want to fly into and from a state where you are legally able to own and possess, and even, you know, if you wanted to carry the firearm. I know there was a story about a gentleman who flew into New York City, who got arrested upon arriving because he had the firearm with him. So obviously check the state that you're from and the state that you're going to's laws, of course. But I did my homework on that end and studied up Nevada as much as I could. And there was no incidents, obviously. It probably ended up, thankfully, not needing it, of course. But we never know when we're going to need it. So it's not sometimes, Batari, no matter what.
Yeah, which leads to kind of a setback that I had a while ago now with carrying. I had a dentist appointment, and I was really, I mean, kind of panicked. Like, I, you know, was going to be going alone, and so I should carry. And it's not a doctor's office, and it's not a hospital, so it's not technically a gun-free zone, but it still feels very, like, clinical and medical. And it's, you know, a female dentist, and all of the employees are females, and I'm just like, oh, this could, if something just, you know, if somehow someone saw me carrying, I don't want to have a horrible story, you know. So I was thinking about not carrying, or, you know, should I carry in the purse, you know, what should I do? And so Al and I, you know, talked it over, and
I was trying to reassure her that even if she did, you know, get quote-unquote caught, that it would only be a private trespass warning, and all she would have to do is leave the premises. There is no breaking of the law unless you apparently stay there and refuse to leave, then you're criminally trespassing. But
I was more of a bottom line person, and I get lost in the details, and I'm like imagining that if somehow they saw that I was carrying, they probably wouldn't even indicate to me that they saw, and I might not necessarily know, and they'd probably call the cops, and the cops would be there. And I'm just, you know, this is how my mind works, running through all these things. And so, you know, I'll carry, but then do I carry my purse or the ankle holster when you're reclined in those chairs and they're cleaning your teeth? You know, do I carry appendix? I needed x-rays, so the lady was going to put that, like, lead apron thing. She was going to lay that over me, and so I ended up carrying appendix, and I kind of kept my arms crossed at my waist, so it was kind of laying over that spot just fine, and it was never an issue, but I was so nervous to do that.
I guess this is a lesson for us husbands out there, or boyfriends, or, you know, male counterparts to the females in our lives that carry. They do think about things completely different than we do sometimes. I saw it as it's a legal place for you to carry, and it's going to be quite early in the morning, and, you know, if you read statistics, crimes do happen early in the morning, and I wanted her to have, you know, this, you know, basically live the Semper Potari lifestyle, you know, and to particularly, you know, if you guys remember episode one, the reason I carry today is predominantly because of my wife and to protect her in a situation where normally I wouldn't be able to. And that definitely goes for her carry permit, at least to me, is that protects her when I'm not around. And to the extent possible, I want her to carry as much as is legal, you know, and just for her to not want to, I had to really sit back and think, you know, well, what is really the matter here? And she was just very scared about the possibility that, you know, reclining in a chair would expose the firearm and or at least the bulge of it. And thankfully there was no issue, it was concealed perfectly, and it went without incident.
Yeah, I don't think there's been much since then when I carry. I'm still using, by the way, in that appendix position, the sticky holster. I haven't used the other holsters since I got the sticky holster.
Yeah, the sticky holster.
Still using the ankle holster for the end of the softball season, except I think one night it was cold, and so I used the sticky in a coat pocket.
Mm.
But
yeah, and that's another reason why we're thinking as it gets colder here that perhaps the 26 might be much more concealable, since you'll have more layers on and thicker clothing.
Mm-hmm.
But we haven't made that jump yet, and we're almost getting to the point where we want to start buying things so we can podcast about it and turn it into an episode.
Wink, wink. Like we need that excuse. But yeah.
So other than that, what else do we have on the agenda? I think one of the next episodes, if not the next episode, will be on frequently asked questions of carrying a concealed weapon and firearms in general, of FAQ, if you will. And we want to solicit our listeners, if they have any questions, or for the more experienced listeners, if they had any, if they can put on their newbie hat, if they can remember that far back, and maybe relay some questions about what they didn't know at the beginning in that.
Yeah, this isn't like a literal things that we have been asked a lot. It's just, you know, all the questions we had when we were starting out and didn't know anything, kind of the reason that we started this podcast.
Right.
Looking for just really, really basic knowledge that people were taking for granted. And, you know, there'll be a little bit of lingo and some defining of things.
Yeah, and I just want to give my example, when I would peruse the gun forums before I really knew anything about carrying a concealed weapon and or guns and ammo in general, I would read all these threads about people who'd say, hey, got this great deal at Wally World on ammo, and there'd be tons and tons of these threads, and they're like, yeah, well, I just go to my local Wally World and, you know, get ammo for this amount and all you can, you know, buy and all this stuff. And I remember talking to Dagny and saying, man, we, all these guys down south have this awesome store where it sounds like it's paradise, you know, it's called Wally World.
I still laugh thinking about, like, that's just Walmart, honey. So, and that's not necessarily gun lingo, but it comes up a lot on the boards.
It is. It's I'd never heard of Wally World before. Well, I've only heard of it before in the context of Chevy Chase and National Lampoon's Vacation, where they all end up at Wally World. So here I am imagining some sort of glorious amusement park setting where they sell all the ammo you can want and need, and cheaper than any place that I know. So, yeah, once I realized it was Walmart, I felt a bit foolish because, you know, and I think at that point I'd even gone to Walmart for ammo and bought it there. So. But that's one of the things that I think would be funny to talk about. And if any listener has any similar stories, or at least, you know, wanting to know what double action versus single action is. I know that one was also tricky for me to kind of
remember. And I still can't keep that one straight. I really can't.
So that's just something we wanted to talk about next time, and we definitely guarantee it will not be as long as the gap between 18 and 19, which is going on almost 2 months now, I think.
Yep, getting close.
But as the winter comes, we'll be inside more. When we're inside more, we'll want to podcast more. So we did travel a lot, and we've been thinking about everyone out there. We hope you missed us, and we hope you'll forgive us. And anything else you want to say?
I don't think so. Just, you know, feel free to send us any emails. Again, it's ccwpodcast@gmail.com.
Yep.
And until the next time,
stay tuned.
Semper Potare.